Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing good. We have an event coming up.
That's right. Kansas City, Justin. It's the town we live in. July 3rd and 4th, 2021, True Crime Podcast Festival is happening. This will be at the Lowe's Convention Center in Kansas City. So if you want tickets, you can go to truecrimepodcastfestival.com. And you'll find the links you need.
And we know it's a little last minute, but with COVID and everything going on, things were in flux for a while. So if you can make it, please go buy a ticket. And with that, we just got back from CrimeCon. It was in Austin, for those of you that weren't there. And we got to hang out with True Crime Garage, Truth and Justice, and
Paradise After Dark.
Yeah, and Sarah from Voices for Justice, Hell and Gone, Fruity Loops, Cult Crimes and Cabernet, Affirmative Murder, and True Crime IRL. A lot of cool indie podcasters that you need to check out.
Awesome.
So Aaron, tonight's case is one that I guess I'm only surprised by when the accused act so brazen. Just, they literally telegraph their intentions. that just is the part that really stuck with me when it was all said and done. I mean, there's a lot of crazy details about this case, but that was one of the few things that I was just like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. But with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight we're talking about the disappearance and assumed death of Heather Elvis. This took place in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Now, she disappeared in December of 2013, but we really need to back up and tell you more about who Heather was. She was born in 1993, the middle child of Terry and Debbie Elvis. She had a brother named Chris and a younger sister named Morgan, and they were extremely close. Heather was into makeup, photography, art. She was known to be very independent and the kind of person who was loving life. She definitely, whether they call it, seized the day. So very outgoing, and somewhat rebellious too. She got into trouble a lot with her parents, but you know, the love was still there, of course. She was also known to be very candid. And I don't know that this is unique to Heather, because a lot of the women I've ever known have been very candid.
I think women are far better at expressing themselves than men are. So yeah.
Yes. And that's how people should take this. I'm not trying to make it sound like that's a negative at all. She graduated high school in 2011, and she was working at the Tilted Kilt as a hostess. And this is an Irish-Scottish themed sports bar.
Okay, it's like Hooters or Twin Peaks. The women will wear more revealing clothes, and it's like a sports bar, but it has a Irish theme to it.
Well, I've never been to any of those places, but anyway, Heather met a very good friend named Brianna at work. They also shared an apartment in Myrtle Beach later on. So it just so happens that she met someone else at work, a night maintenance worker. His name was Sidney Moorer, and he worked at multiple restaurants in Myrtle Beach, including the Tilted Kilt, of course. He was kind of a handsome guy, but he was also 17 years older than Heather.
Yeah, he was 37.
And this wasn't something that was surprising to anyone, because while the couple seemed to maybe try to keep it a secret, there was no secret.
They had public displays of affection. They would take breaks together, go out to his car, things like that.
And how many times does this happen, Justin, where a woman will meet a man, but he's married, and he says, "Don't worry, I'm almost out of my marriage. It's ending. I'm going to be with you."
Or he just straight up doesn't say he's married for at least the first few weeks or month of the relationship, and then things kind of get figured out after a while, and then he comes up with that excuse. Because I truly believe that initially Heather didn't know he was married. I think that that came out later, but that's just me and my interpretation of the case.
And people that knew Heather, they followed her on Facebook, and they could see that she was posting about somebody, but she wasn't saying who. So it's one of those relationships that's sort of secret, but not really. And it was in October of 2013 when Heather's coworkers, they started feeling like they needed to do something about this. They didn't like that she was dating this married man, and they felt like there was trouble here.
When the cat's out of the bag that he's married, you know, people are going to start judging her. People are going to start saying, "Hey, that's not right." I guess some of her coworkers actually called in to the Tilted Kilt, acting like they were Sydney's wife and saying, "Hey, somebody's there sleeping with my husband. She better watch out," stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And this was meant to scare the two apart. And it did seem like Sydney got nervous. He got cold feet about being there. So he stopped coming to the restaurant for a little while. And at the end of October, it looked like this ruse was a success, because the relationship ended.
It appeared that Heather had moved on and actually started dating other people, right?
This happened at the end of October. Was not only was Heather nervous about these calls, but then she got a call from Sydney's wife, Tammy.
From the real wife, not her coworkers.
Mm-hmm. And it's during this phone call that Sydney gets on and tells Heather he just used her. And I think that was the final nail in this relationship.
Yeah. He pretty much told her, like, "You're out of my life. You were just, you know, a sex toy to me. I don't care about you." And this is pretty devastating to Heather, because they were boyfriend, girlfriend. They were very intimate with each other. She cared very much about him. And for him to treat her this way, she's kind of devastated about it.
So Heather's out of Sydney and Tammy's life, and the Moorers go on a 3-week road trip to California. They're going to work on their marriage. And they also purchased a brand new vehicle, a black Ford F-150, for this trip.
It all seems like it's all said and done now, and we're going to go reconcile our marriage. Now, Heather will end up meeting a man, Stephen Schiraldi, and she'll go out on a date with him. This is on December 17th, and they go out to a restaurant. They go out and look at the Christmas lights in the area. And then they end up at the Inlet Square Mall, where he, Steven, tries to teach Heather how to drive a manual transmission on his truck. It's kind of a cute little moment where he's teaching her, and this is a first date, and there's a picture of her learning how to drive a stick. And she even, I think, texted her dad like, "Hey, I'm finally learning how to drive a stick," because apparently her father had attempted to teach her and failed miserably. So she's out with this Steven guy, and he drops her off, or he claims he drops her off at around 1:15 in the morning. And he says that's the last he's seen or heard from her.
December 18th, 2013. It's the early morning hours. It's the last time anyone heard from Heather. Now, Heather had called one of her best friends, Brianna, at 1:44 in the morning. Brianna was at home, and she said Heather was crying hysterically. She said, "Sydney called me." And Brianna, who definitely was behind getting rid of Sydney, said, "Why did you answer?" And Heather said it was because she didn't recognize the number. So if she had known it was Sydney, she wouldn't have picked up. But since she picked up, she talked with him. Sydney told her, "I left my wife. I'm sorry. I want to be with you." So Brianna said, "Don't do anything rash. Just you need to sleep on this and we'll talk about it in the morning." And she was really under the impression that Heather was going to listen to her, take her advice. Now, we have her phone activity, Justin. And from between 2:29 to 3:05 in the morning, Heather called that number 9 times. And then she made some other calls to Sydney's number. These calls are from between 3:17 to 3:27 in the morning. There was no cell phone activity after 3:41 in the morning.
So that morning at around 4:10, a police officer was on patrol by the Peachtree Landing boat launch. Peachtree is this kind of natural reserve area where there's a large pond or lake, and he sees a car. So he checks this car out. He just wanted to make sure that there was nobody sleeping inside of it or, you know, doing drugs up to no good. But the car appears to be empty and abandoned. So he makes a note of it, but doesn't fill out an incident report.
It's on December 19th when the Horry County Police Department is called. They're told about a suspicious vehicle at Peachtree Landing. That vehicle is that same green Dodge Intrepid, which is Heather's car. Officer Canterbury got to the landing. He checked out the tags and found out that the car belonged to Terry Elvis. Well, Terry's in his living room and the police come. His wife, Debbie, answers and they ask about this car. And they said, "Oh, that's Heather's car." And they're told that the car was there, but Heather was not. So Terry takes a ride with the officer to go see what's going on out there at Peachtree Landing.
And when they get there, let's just say that you don't need a father's intuition to know that there's something wrong. When you find your daughter's car pretty much abandoned, and when you're calling her number, it's going straight to voicemail. They did search her car, and they found her ID in the center console, but her phone, wallet, purse, everything else was missing. This isn't looking good. Now, this area, the only reason to go there is to launch your boat into the water. There's no reason for her car to be there. She didn't mention to her roommate or any of her friends that there was some party going on. But of course, you know, there's the one friend who knows that she had just spoken with Sydney that same night.
The police get started on this investigation, establishing a timeline of Heather's last known whereabouts. And when they look into that, they find out about Steven. He was the guy that she dated that night, and he was teaching her to drive a stick shift.
Now, when they talk to Steven, he says that, "Hey, we hung out, we did this, and then I ended up dropping her off." Now, Aaron, any other time,
I would be like, he was out on a date with her. He's the last person to see her alive. I don't believe this kid. He did something. But his story pans out and Stephen's mother vouches for him. So he has an alibi.
I think there's one other thing that helps Stephen in this case, which is when police interview Heather's friends, coworkers, they start getting a different name.
And of course, that's Sydney Moore. Now, it's not that her friends felt that Sydney was abusive or ever showed Heather any hostility, but it's because he was married and that breakup went down in a very bad way. And also, Sydney's wife, Tammy, had started harassing Heather. So this keys the police off in a different direction. And Stephen, maybe he's not our guy.
What they find out is that after Sydney broke things off with Heather, Tammy, Sydney's wife, really started harassing Heather. This was over social media. It was over text. And she called her nonstop for days and days and days. And she even included videos and pictures of Sydney and Tammy together, just trying to really drive home to Heather that she's been displaced. Also, that Tammy wasn't done with her. Here's the thing. Tammy really didn't know who Heather was. She just knew, this is the woman that my husband cheated on me with, and I have her number. So that's enough, isn't it? I mean, anytime you're being harassed like that and there's no way to stop it, that right there is enough motive for the police to really turn away from Stephen and start looking at the Moores.
When the police start checking surveillance footage, start checking out phone records and whatnot, they're seeing it's possible that Sydney had driven his truck in that direction to Peachtree Landing. So this is giving them a little bit more evidence, a little bit more probable cause to look at Sydney. They also found that he had gone to Walmart that night and he had parked in a handicapped parking spot. Then he had gone in and bought a pregnancy test and a pack of cigarettes. I don't know if you can get any more Walmart people than that, but that's sort of an odd time to go to Walmart and purchase those things in the middle of the night. It's just one more detail that the police are taking down and using here to figure out Sydney's whereabouts. But they don't waste a lot of time because it's on the 20th. They go and knock on his door at 2 a.m., which that's kind of a rude awakening. And they ask him where he was. He said that he's been on a road trip in California and he had no contact with Heather. He denies being at Peachtree Landing on the 18th.
Well, he can deny all he wants, but it's just a matter of time before the police get some different answers. Now, while that's going on, there are search teams at Peachtree Landing looking for any sign of Heather. And her parents are talking to people via the local news stations. And they're saying, please, if you have any information, you know, please call it in.
Making social media posts and doing a big push to help find her daughter. Now, at the same time, Aaron, Tammy, Sydney's wife, starts posting things on her social media platforms. And she's saying Heather is a psycho whore and that Terry Elvis, her father, has threatened her children and to go look at Heather's Twitter because she's really twisted. I mean, somebody goes missing and your phone number and your social media posts, like you're one of the people that has a beef with that person. And then you start posting stuff like that on social media. Are you asking for the police to come check you out? This is just so brazen.
Now, when I started off talking about this case, I said it was a missing person case with an assumed murder. But here's the thing. Because there were so many phone calls from Heather that morning, they're able to figure out kind of what happened. Because this number she was calling was a payphone, So one, they need to check out the payphone if there are any cameras nearby. And two, this obviously was someone who wanted to lure her away. They tracked down this payphone at a gas station. Now, because of the placement of the camera, you can't really identify the person who's at the payphone at that time. But they have a good idea who it was.
Yeah. When you have the timeline of Heather calling her friend and saying, Sydney just called me from this number. And then you have a person who looks remarkably like Sydney. I know it's dark and it's hard to make out, calling from that number. I'm sorry, but I don't need 1080p crystal clear security camera to know who's making that phone call. Plus, they have security camera footage of a dark Ford F-150 going back and forth on this road that looks remarkably similar to Sydney's F-150. And when they do a quick search of all the DMV records, guess who's the only person that owns a brand new Ford F-150 in that entire area?
Now, at some point, Sydney Moore is told that they know he was there, that he was at that payphone. And he had been telling them, my wife and I were running errands. We had gone to Walmart to buy a pregnancy test because my wife's trying to get pregnant. And he was saying he didn't make any calls. But then he ends up having to tell them, yes, it was me, because I was actually calling Heather to say, leave us alone.
Get out of my life. Yeah.
And that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Let's go to a payphone in the middle of the night, call her and say, stay out of my life, when you haven't had any interaction with her at all in days, if not weeks.
And your wife is harassing her over and over again.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Now, the police are obviously going to target Sydney and Tammy for this. And they check out their truck. Now, their truck doesn't appear to be out of sorts. There doesn't appear to be any evidence of any kind of foul play within the truck. But this is a brand new Ford, and it does have a navigation system. You know, and back then, the navigation systems had a little SD card that, you know, give them the signal and the updates and whatever. So this is going to be easy, right? They can just go check the Ford's nav system and see where it was that night. But what happens when they check the nav system in the truck, Aaron?
When they attempt to look into this, they had disengaged their GPS on December 18th. So there was no way to track where they were, at least via the GPS. But it certainly is strange that they buy this new truck and the only time they disengage it is on the 18th.
Yeah. That's just odd.
That's not coincidence, is it?
I mean, if you just took the chip out and never put it back in, or if you took the chip out as soon as you bought the truck, that's one thing. But to only take it out the night that this abduction happens, I'm just appalled at the stupidity of it. But again, it could all just be circumstantial, and he could just be at the local Walmart buying these things and calling from a payphone, all these things on the same exact night.
The other way I look at it, though, is you used the term brazen earlier. I mean, they could have just taken it out, left it disengaged that whole time, but it was just disengaged on the 18th. Again, this is just, it's like they're hiding something by waving a big flag. It just doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't stop the police because they're definitely on the scent. And on February 21st, 2014, both Sidney and his wife, Tammy, are arrested for first-degree murder and kidnapping.
Now, when they question Tammy about Sidney's affair, she kind of backpedals and says, no, no, I have boyfriends. He had girlfriends. We're in an open marriage. Okay. But that doesn't explain all the hateful text messages and social media posts, but whatever.
That's something that happens throughout this case with this couple, especially with Tammy, is despite whatever evidence or facts exist, it's like she thinks she can just talk her way out of everything.
Now, the police go to Sidney and Tammy's house to execute a search warrant, and they find that there's a security system. So they're like, oh, cool. We can just pull the footage off this and see where they were that night. The only problem is that security system was installed the very next day, and they had a previous security system with multiple cameras that they tore down literally the night of this event. So the police didn't have access to anything prior to the 18th or 19th. But then after that, they do. And there is security footage of Sidney and Tammy cleaning the truck in the driveway. And prosecutors want to use this during trial, but the judge says, nah, people can clean their car out in their driveway. It's not admissible. But I mean, what are the chances of you take down the security system and then you put in a whole new one? And then there's footage of you cleaning your truck out, a brand new truck.
Brazen. They know this is going to be found. And it really feels like, you know, anybody who follows this case from the beginning, you can see this pattern of, yeah, we're going to do this, but we think we're covered. We don't think it will actually be able to be used against us. Again, why even have another security system at all?
I mean, and we've covered other cases. One of them, like the security system just went down the day of. All of a sudden, there's all this footage missing. And I'm just like, really, man? But yeah, this is sort of the same deal here. But they're taking them to trial, and they're going to charge them with kidnapping and first-degree murder charges.
Well, that was the plan anyway.
Yeah. But when you don't have a body, let's just say prosecutors, they get cold feet.
They don't want to go into a trial that they have a real question of whether they can win it or not. And proving that she was murdered, you need at least a certain amount of blood. You need something. And they just had nothing. And this is what's interesting is you would think, well, how can they prove the kidnapping? Well, in South Carolina, the definition of kidnapping is to decoy an individual.
The call that Sidney made from that payphone, they're saying he's telling her, come meet me here. He's coaxing her to a location to meet up against her will, essentially.
So because there was some ruse to get Heather out to Peachtree Landing with that phone call, it's kidnapping. Justin, Sidney, and Tammy are tried separately. Is this something that surprises you, or do you feel like they had good reason to do it that way?
Well, it's the hope that they will turn on each other as opposed to, I guess, partnering up. So they're trying Sidney, and they're hoping that he will turn against Tammy. The more they look into their relationship, the more they're finding out that Tammy was possibly the one that wears the pants in the relationship, however you want to put it.
She was the dominant one.
Yeah. They have so many stupid terms in the documentaries and stuff, but they paint this picture that she was very controlling of Sidney, that she forced him to get a tattoo of her name across his stomach. And with the comment of, you have to do this because you were messing around on me. This is what's going to happen. And that she handcuffed him to the bed at night. And not in a sexual way, but in a controlling way.
That is something that has been disputed. But I have a feeling that with all of the evidence, you could say, of how dominant she was in the relationship, that wouldn't surprise anyone.
So they have this kidnapping charge against Sydney.
This trial involving Sydney Moore started in June of 2016. And what was the motive? Of course, the prosecution has to have a motive, right, Justin?
Well, they don't actually have to have a motive, but in this case, it's an easy one to paint, right?
Well, I think they need one because they really don't have any, they don't have any evidence of Heather. And so when you don't have a body, I think you need a real motive because that's going to make your case easier to present to a jury.
Well, I think it's Sydney was cheating on Tammy with Heather. Is this affair, the lying, the cheating? And then you turn around and see Tammy's response to this, which is very aggressive, very hostile.
Well, yeah, and that would be a good motive. But the prosecution actually presents a different motive, which is Heather was potentially pregnant. And what they did was they talked to coworkers. They saw pictures of Heather during that time from October to December, and there was a noticeable weight gain. And she had even ordered a new bra, skirt, and shrug for work. Now, word had it that Heather had taken a pregnancy test at work in November of 2013, but the test showed error. So she didn't really know, but I think there was this suspicion that she was pregnant. And that would be one heck of a motive, especially if you're not just cheating on your wife, but now you've gotten another woman pregnant.
And then you go back to the night of, and you have Sydney going to Walmart, buying a pregnancy test and a pack of cigarettes. And all I can think is, were they going to force her to take a pregnancy test? That's disgusting.
That, I think, tells you more about what potentially happened that night.
So they present their case. Obviously, the defense is going to come back with, you have zero direct evidence tying my client to Heather the night of. You have zero evidence that she was in his truck or that they made contact.
And it's really tricky because there is evidence presented of the cell phones and of the video showing the vehicles going down the road and only the black F-150 coming back. But somehow the defense makes it seem like, oh, that's not proof. That's not proof of anything. To me, that is an excellent presentation of the evidence that the prosecution does have, which is you have a connection between these people, between Sydney Moore and Heather Elvis, and Heather Elvis drives to Peachtree Landing, and then you have the black F-150 that goes out there, which, using the cell phones, you can see that they, meaning the Moores, went out to Peachtree Landing. And since you have it on video, I don't know how the defense kept a straight face while they were saying, this isn't evidence, this isn't proof.
I know.
I was stunned hearing that.
Personally, I looked at that and I thought this was a perfect execution of circumstantial evidence. Like, this is what you go for. But they can't make it happen.
So while you and I agree on that point, the jury, they couldn't reach a verdict. They spent 2 days trying to work this out before the judge said mistrial. But that didn't mean Sydney Moore was free. They just scheduled him for a retrial.
In August of 2017, they came back at Sydney with an obstruction of justice charge for lying to police about making that call from the payphone. Because remember, when they were questioning him, we were on a trip or we weren't around. And then they're like, well, we have you on video at Walmart that night, so we know you're not on a trip. And then we have you on video at that gas station where the payphone is. So then he has to turn around and admit that he was there. It's obvious that he had lied to police, and this obstruction of justice charge, normally when somebody's charged with obstruction of justice, it's like the seatbelt ticket that's added on. It's, you know, it's a nothing charge, but what do they get him with on this one?
They gave him a sentence of 10 years. I mean, they had him nailed to the wall with this charge, and the jury only had to deliberate for 50 minutes. That was on August 30th, 2017.
For most people, 10 years for obstructing justice, like, that is throwing the book at somebody. But I think in this case, everyone knows you did this and we're going to throw the book at you because we find you to be a danger to society, and you can spend 10 years behind bars for lying and hiding evidence.
Tammy Moore's trial began October of 2018. The prosecutor, Chris Helms, this is where he really goes after Tammy, saying she was the dominant one in the relationship, and presented evidence that she was telling Sidney where he was going to work, what time he could do things, what he was going to do, and more evidence that Sidney was very submissive to her. And if you think back to when he got on the phone after Tammy had called Heather, and then he gets on the phone and tells Heather, I was just using you. Well, they're presenting this evidence that this was really Tammy who was behind all this. Because if it was just up to Sidney, he would have just carried on a relationship with Heather. They bring up that tattoo that you talked about earlier, where Sidney got a tattoo of Tammy on his stomach. It's so weird that the defense tries to claim that Sidney got that tattoo before he even met Heather. But what are you going to do? They have to defend their client.
Yeah. And it's hard because if they don't say where he got the tattoo at, and if they've cleaned out their social media posts, you can't say when he got that tattoo. And Tammy's going to fall back on her usual, I had a cordial conversation with Heather. We got along just fine. But then the prosecutor will read some of her texts to Heather and some of the threats she made to Heather.
Tammy was never seen on any surveillance footage. If she was in that truck, like the cell phone indicates, well, you can't see her. So what they do, of course, is they stick with the phone records, and they also stick with the stalking, the harassment.
They find out that at least Tammy, if not both Tammy and Sidney, had followed Heather around. It goes way beyond just a few harassing text messages. It was full-on stalking, and it's pretty scary that this went unchecked for as long as it did. And I was surprised that Heather didn't just block her number, but it appears that even if she had blocked any numbers, they would have just resorted to payphones.
The defense attorney, Greg McCollum, once again was using the angle of, there's no evidence here, there's no crime scene, you have nothing tying my client, Tammy Moore, to anything having to do with Heather Elvis. But once again, there's a little gotcha here, because when you go through Tammy's social media activity, which she was on there a lot, there's a window where she's not active at all. And it just so happens to be that morning when Heather went missing.
Of course. Another thing that I found interesting about Tammy was the judge had issued a gag order so no one could speak about the case. And Tammy, she went on an ABC News show and did an interview about it, denied her involvement with the case, pleaded her innocence, and said she was more angry at Sidney than she was at Heather. In fact, she wasn't mad at Heather at all. So she violated her gag order to try to drum up public support.
I talked about the cell phones, and the expert witness for the prosecution was Michael Melson. He was able to prove or show that Tammy and Sidney's phones were following Heather's phone. Now, what they do is they check the cell towers along the route that was taken, and they can show that at every point, Sidney's and Tammy's phones were in the same spots. Again, this is very detailed, and I don't know how one can get around that. They also brought in Ashley Kaysen, which was Tammy's sister. The footage showed her and Tammy searching in the grass. And what's alleged here is that they were looking for listening devices. Like, they felt like they were being spied on. Did you see footage of this?
Yeah, it was out in Tammy's front yard because, again, they'd pulled the footage from the current security system, and Tammy's down underneath like a bird bath with a mirror looking for listening devices because she knew that the cops had put bugs all over the place. She was all paranoid about it. And so they bring the sister up on the stand thinking, well, we'll bring on a character witness here. We'll bring this person on to make Tammy look like a better person. But then they start asking her, why are you out here with Tammy looking for bugging devices? And her sister has zero answers. She just says, oh, we were pulling weeds. It's just like, it's so obvious. So it kind of blew up in the defense's phase. When the police searched the Moore's home, they also found a spent shotgun shell, a bag of concrete mix, and a bunch of cleaning solution. And when they question Tammy about this, she said that the shotgun was used during a turkey hunt, and the concrete was for work they were doing around the house, and the cleaning fluid, she says that it's for their camper. Now, she has an answer for everything. They ask about the truck in the video, but the defense, of course, is just going to come back and say, hey, the security footage of that truck on the road is not clear. You can't make it out. But this is in the face of all of the cell phone data putting them there at the location. I mean, really, you could throw the security footage of the truck out because you have the cell phone data. And the truck's GPS was disabled at that same time. So I don't really care how much the defense shot down the security footage of the truck.
Now, you were talking about Tammy coming up with reasons why these items would be at the house. Well, that wasn't something that she was saying at trial, but she does talk at trial.
I mean, and that's brazen for the accused to take the stand, because normally I would say that's never a good move. And while she's on the stand, she acts very cordial and makes jokes and laughs.
It's a weird testimony because she tries to make it seem like, yeah, I might not have handled this the best way, but she said she did talk to Heather in October. She said she wasn't mean to Heather and Heather wasn't mean back. They talked about the affair. Again, she talks about her and Sydney, meaning Tammy and Sydney, having an open marriage, but that, well, maybe Sydney wasn't honest when he was seeing Heather. And that's why she was upset, and maybe that's why she didn't handle it the best way. But the prosecution has some things to fight back with. And one of those is a text from November 11, 2013, where Tammy texted a friend, I think the bitch is in hiding. Tammy had no answer for that text. She didn't want to talk about it. And this is where you said, probably not the best idea. This is why. Because the prosecution is ready. If you're going to give them that opportunity, they're going to come after you. And they want you to not answer some things because the jury's watching. And they know when you're not answering, it's because you've got nothing good to say.
I will say this. When the prosecutor is cross-examining Tammy, she pulls a flex on the prosecutor. And she'll answer the questions and use the prosecutor's first name, trying to throw the prosecutor off. It's kind of a power move. And I was surprised because, again, Tammy is so brazen that she's going to try to go toe-to-toe with the prosecutor while she's on the stand.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
She was found guilty of kidnapping and conspiracy to commit kidnapping in connection with Heather Elvis's disappearance in December 2013. She was sentenced to 30 years in prison.
The jury didn't have to deliberate long.
No, and these sentences, actually the 30 years was for each sentence, but they run concurrently.
So it's interesting that Sydney had a hung jury with this same kind of trial, but then they were able to find Tammy guilty to me, it's almost the same trial, but different aspects are being highlighted. So there's a different outcome.
Before Tammy Moore was sentenced, though, she tried to really throw people for a loop. She started with the sympathy card by talking about how she's a mom to four kids because she has three of her own. And then she has an extra one that she's looking out for, according to her. And she's saying, they have no one but me. And she tries to make it seem like they're the victims because they were being harassed. And she finished up by saying that she was innocent and that she was Heather's number one advocate because she wants to know what happened to Heather, probably just as much as her parents do.
You're going to get some sympathy points with that because she is a mom, but maybe you shouldn't be harassing other people and murdering them.
But it's Heather's mother who says something that really stuck with me. She said, they won't release our daughter. They kept her and won't let her go. 5 years later, they're still holding her hostage. They stole her life and ruined ours. She was asking the judge to give her the maximum sentence.
I don't blame her.
Now you know why they threw 30 years on each sentence. I think the family, Heather's family speaking, had way more impact than what Tammy had to say. Now, we already talked about how Sydney was sentenced to 10 years on that obstruction of justice charge, but in September of 2019, his retrial happened.
They're going to come back with that kidnapping charge again.
Not only that, but see, they get an interesting witness to testify. It's Donald D. Marino, who's Tammy Moore's cousin. And he testifies that in 2014, Sydney showed him a picture of Heather's body. He said there was blood on her shirt, scratches on her face. He said it appeared that she was deceased. But of course, the defense says, you can't believe this guy. He's had a criminal record, burglary, drug charges.
I mean, he's not a squeaky clean individual, but with all my reading, I couldn't tell that he was getting any kind of reduced sentence for his testimony. I feel like he was just coming out and doing this, being a witness for on behalf of the prosecutor. But if the jury doesn't care about what he has to say about a photo that he allegedly saw, well, remember that security footage of them cleaning out the truck that was suppressed in the first trial? Well, this judge lets it come in. Prosecutor says, if you watch the footage, they're cleaning the back seat of the truck for like over 30 minutes thoroughly. And then they're taking all the cleaning supplies and the rag and they're throwing it in a fire pit. They're burning it all up. This judge decides, okay, that's admissible. You can bring that in.
Don't you feel like that's the right call? I mean, when you put together all the circumstantial evidence, this is a big piece.
Yeah.
Especially when you talk about focusing on a certain area of the vehicle for such an amount of time,
yeah,
more than any other.
And again, this is a fairly new truck. There is no evidence of Heather. Well, this shows you why there's no evidence. It's been cleaned. This is why you'll hear me say, you know, if you ran this thing through several times, you might get a different outcome. Something as simple as one judge saying, this piece of evidence, not admissible. I mean, that first trial, hung jury. This trial, they got more evidence that the judge is letting in.
According to the jury, this was a key part of the trial, was seeing this couple burning the cleaning rags. Why would you do that? The defense tries to say, oh, they burned rags all the time. They burned trash all the time. But this is a little too suspicious. They're trying to get away with something.
I think that you have essentially the first trial replaying out, but now you have both this security footage of them cleaning the truck and this extra witness saying, I saw a picture of Heather dead on his phone. But of course, he no longer has that phone, just like he no longer has the security camera system before this event. And he had no navigation in his truck during the event and all their phones kind of went dead, you know, as far as their social media activity. The jury will end up deliberating for all of 2 hours.
Sydney Moore was found guilty of kidnapping and conspiracy to kidnap on September 18th, 2019. He was also given two 30-year sentences, that would run consecutively. Justin, the crux of this case, I think, isn't just, you know, when you're looking for love, sometimes you look in the wrong places. It's also a story of what happened to Heather. Where could she be?
Well, I know they searched the area around Peachtree Landing pretty thoroughly, where her car was found, obviously. But when you look at pictures, you know, this is kind of swampy, lake, wooded area. It's not an easy place to search, but if you think about it, they were cleaning out the truck. You saw the truck driving to Peachtree and then driving away from Peachtree. Their phone and everything else shows that they weren't there for that long.
Maybe about a minute.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can derive that they took Heather somewhere. Whether or not she was alive or dead when they took her somewhere, they kidnapped her and moved her, put her somewhere else. And I was expecting them to turn on each other. I was expecting with a little bit of time, oh, I'll get a reduced sentence if I tell you that Tammy did it. Cool. I'll take my 10 years and say she did it. Or Tammy, he was the one that was with her, not me. So he took care of business. You know, I was expecting that to happen. But neither one of them turned on the other. Maybe it's just a matter of time. But it's just disgusting that they've left this family with no answers, no resolve. And even when Heather went missing, they were blasting her on social media and saying disgusting things. How much can you telegraph that you did something, you were involved, and then turn around and act like, no, everything's fine?
I think that the fact that neither one turned on the other says everything you need to know about their relationship. Sidney may have cheated on his wife, but there was no way he was ever going to leave his wife. And he still hasn't.
I mean, they're both spending 30 years behind bars. I don't know if impressed is the right word, but wow, this couple is pretty inseparable.
I do want to say that while a lot seems to indicate that Heather Elvis being pregnant may have raised the ire of Tammy Moore, I don't know that that's necessarily the catalyst here. I don't know how you feel about it, but when I look through this case, it seems to me like Sidney had kept Heather a secret from his wife. And when she found out, she was really angry. And there was a point at which Tammy had sent a text to somebody. It was on December 17th of 2013. She sent a text to a friend saying, "I just had someone cheat on me that I thought was my soulmate. You never know who will screw you over in life. I felt totally betrayed. I'm better off without the liar." And, you know, it's one thing for her to threaten her husband, but when she really looked it over, she thought, Heather's the expendable one.
Yeah.
And that's something that happens. People can go through and start directing their rage somewhere. And in this case, as we know, with the harassment, the stalking, Tammy started directing her anger at Heather Elvis and didn't stop until, well, Heather disappeared.
It's just all that betrayal and jealousy that she felt. And maybe the suspected pregnancy was the last straw, but it's not what started this.
But I would highly recommend anybody interested in this case to also watch the documentary on this from ABC 2020. It's titled The Devil's Triangle. You know, I've watched several different things on this case, but that one really stood out to me as being just very well put together. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.